to give you a sense of the White House organization at that time and then how things changed over time, I don't think that I read the memcons of your conversations. But I did not even, the NSC system at that point was not functioning. It took quite a while to do that. I don't think I was involved in briefing you before your trip.
No.
Did you receive presidential instructions for that trip, too? Was there a letter from the president to you indicating what the president's hopes were for this mission? And how it fit into Vietnam, our policy toward Vietnam?
No, not that I remember.
Because that certainly, that's, it really
that
is
happened.
Just in the
that's
earliest days. That's right, in the earliest days. From that, I think that
we didn't even meet with the president before we left.
Well, that, any presidential mission after the second half of 1977 would have entailed a presidential letter, which would have been drafted by us in concurrence with the state, so that you'd have had some framework into which to put this. Did you have did you go with any talking points?
Oh yes.
You did that? Yes.
The statement that I used
at the outset
on the 17th of March.
And
of course we
I'm not sure I was even involved in the drafting of that.
We worked on that on the way over.
Uh-huh.
With staff. We worked on that on the way over. It wasn't, I think there was a preliminary draft before we left, but we worked it over on the way.
Mm-hmm. And so it had just EA clearance based on whoever was on the plane. Because you didn't have a plane with a secure communications back.
No. Economy wave that hit the administration, particularly economies that apparently had visibility. We were supposed to go commercial.
No, I didn't.
And we finally got C-141. We finally wound up from Clarkfield into Hanoi. Of course, we were in the one without the windows. You know,
yeah, the tanker, C-135.
C-135. But Hanoi couldn't take that plane. So it was a C-141 we took from Clark Field into Hanoi. And we were practically sitting on kegs that we had air conditioner was dripping on us and so on. It was really rushed. So that we could have said almost anything we wanted, very frankly, as far as the instructions were concerned.
Very different from about a year to 2 years later, wasn't it?
Very
different style. It's just that notion of the first few months of an administration trying to understand, in effect, almost how to conduct a foreign policy.
So, Phan Hien kept pounding on Article 8B and Article 21. And he tied it all together, and in effect, what he said was not in effect. Why ask our people to participate, he said, in the research and the cooperation on the MIA question? We'll be asked, people will ask, what about the responsibility of the United States to healing the wounds of war? What about this obligation, he said? Vietnamese families have lost their members. Vietnamese houses have been destroyed by U.S. bombs. What have the American people said about these questions? This is in response to us saying that this was an important matter for the American people generally. He said, if we told our people that we let you find out the information about the Americans missing and left out the question of reciprocity, I am sure I would not be able to remain in my post at the Foreign Ministry. This is the worst way to do it. Therefore, both parties should take into account the needs and concerns of the other party. And then he went back again over the prostitutes and the drug addicts and the great damage to Vietnam, and then said, he also said they were receiving a great many inquiries from American banks and companies and firms. You better get on about your business because important segments of your own country want something done about this. Then he said to take a break. It was pretty bleak because we didn't have unlimited time. And I remember five of us gathered, with a couple of the staff, I said, well, if this were a strike situation, I'd say the message is, this strike's going to go on 6 more months. And then someone, I think it was Mike, said, I think now is the time for you to talk to Phan Hien. Luckily, I don't know if it's the Vietnamese style, but I gather it is, they didn't serve us tea at the table. We had to break to get the tea.
And did the Vietnamese, by the way, tape this session? Did they have a tape recorder going? Do you remember? Did they ask whether they could? Since it was there, obviously they were able to do it anyway.
They didn't ask, and none was visible.
You just have to assume it was being done. Do you speak into a microphone? Not like China.
We were on either side of a table.
With no mics.
And no mics. It was in the guest house was here. We went across the compound. The government house was over here, and we met there.
The reason I asked that question, sorry to interrupt your strand, and want to get back to his statement in your private meeting. But when I went up with Dick Holbrook for the negotiations with the Vietnamese in September of 78, when we were seriously discussing with them normalization, they put a tape recorder right on the table first thing and said, do you mind if we tape this session? And I was very surprised by that technique, and I wondered whether that's part of the diplomacy somehow. In any case, you wanted a private session, and at the recommendation of Mike Mansfield.
I think it was Mike. So I sought out the Vietnamese interpreter, and said I would like to have an off-the-record meeting just between Phan Hien and myself. And he went away and came back quite quickly and said we could have it in 10 minutes, I think. One of our people, not the commission, said, well, this fellow's come to see me too. Said I wanted to take an American interpreter with me. And we can be with him in a minute.
Yeah, right. Right, yeah.
My reaction was no. Because what I was going to say was fun. He hadn't understood some English anyway. It was either going to have a product or it didn't exist. So I said, no, I will rely on Mr. So-and-so. And so then we had the meeting. So we can pick it up.
Good.
The next
we'll do that at that. That's fascinating. Interesting discussion. And one where the one thing that, in addition to covering this issue, just to as you look through your notes and reflect on it, with the advantage of hindsight, I guess there are two questions. One, what in your mind explain the Vietnamese determination to link reparation to progress on normalization? Because in a sense, they finally decoupled those two, but it was too late. If they had decoupled those two issues when you were there, or begun to indicate that they were prepared to decouple them.
They indicated they were prepared to decouple them. But then at the next Paris meeting, I think, they coupled them back again.
Yeah. I wasn't aware they had indicated they might be willing to decouple them. Well, we have to explore that.
Right.
And then, because that there is that sense then of a lost opportunity. That was the moment.
I think they coupled them in the first place because they thought, I don't think they're going to understand why we were so eager to have remains.
Yeah.
And if we were so eager, they thought, well, maybe we can have a high price.
That was the
it.
Second question I was going to ask is, in a sense, was our strategy well thought through, or if the object was really to move that relationship forward, should we have put the MIA issue so front and center and in effect send them a false signal as to the amount of leverage they had over us? I have a feeling that we, by the way we approached this issue, such high visibility so quickly after coming into office, we inadvertently signaled to them that they had much more leverage over us than in fact they did.
Well, when I tell about the Alpha the Record
yeah.
meeting, I was conscious of that, and I tried to address that
yeah.
point.
Yeah, yeah. Great. Okay, we'll continue.